There's a subject on my mind that I have wanted to talk to a bunch of men about, because in the counseling room I see this problem constantly existing in our society, and I'm sure that it faces you and may come close to home with you. It's a problem that is causing so much emotional disturbance today, and so much of our problem that you just can hardly believe it. It's the problem of the absent father. The father's role in the home is so obliterated, so disturbed, so distorted from the scriptural presentation of what a man's role is, that there's a great deal of confusion. To give you an illustration of what I'm talking about, we rather emphasize the dominant female rather than saying the absent father or the passive father. We turn to that woman, you know. That's so-and-so. She's won't let loose. She just has to heckle me all the time. And we emphasize the dominant female, and there's much problem about the dominant female, believe me. I might mention a few things about that. But she wouldn't be dominant if the man played his role. Let's remember that we let the woman get by with what she does. It's a not as easily solved as this, you know. You go, no, I'm the man. Sometimes after we talk like this to some men, they try it, and they come back rather bruised. It's a matter of development. It's a matter of growth into a different position. You just don't suddenly alarm the dear lady with, I am the man now. But the man's role in the home, being the weaker vessel, so to speak, has brought the woman in a strong role, and it has caused many, many disturbances. Just to give you some facts that maybe you hadn't thought about, practically all of our homosexuality, I say practically all of it, comes from the dominant female and the passive father. The boy grows up in a home where mom will not let him fulfill his sense of being a man, clobbers him for many of his male initiatives. Oh, you couldn't do that. You ride your bicycle in the street and there'll be some car gets you or something. And the poor boy wants to be a man and drive a bicycle like the rest of the kids ride bicycles and various other things. You go swimming, but don't get wet. That's one part of it. Another is the mother who is constantly controlling the son, telling him every decision to make and so on. And it creates a fear of the female, a dread of her, a feeling of resistance to her that makes it very difficult for that boy to relate to women outside in life. The father, what does he do? He stands by and lets mother do it. Why? Well, this has gone on for a few generations. He's doing the best he can with the situation. He has a little shop in the garage where he works, you know, trying his best to make ends meet as far as a little extra cash is concerned. There's always that pressure. And so this is the easy out, the logical out. Well, I'll make a little extra buck with a few things I can make or paint, or I'll be busy with a second job. This is the way it happens in L.A. Maybe it doesn't happen that way here. But practically all men in L.A. seem to have two jobs. They got one day shift and a night shift or a part-time shift or something, working all the time. And the women oftentimes are working. It's high cost of living, I'm sure. The cost of high living hasn't too much to do with it, but it's escaping from facing something, escaping from something. If I am too busy, I don't have to feel to blame. After all, I do have to meet expenses. And the boys and the girls have a hard time finding dad. Homosexuality isn't just a boy's problem. It's almost equally a girl's problem. In our L.A. area, we have a tremendous amount of this, and that's why I'm mentioning it. I'm not trying to be sensational at all. There's so much of this homosexuality in both sexes that there have taverns that are dedicated to homosexuals. There are certain restaurants, dance halls, and all this sort of thing for entertainment. And several homosexuals whom I've counseled tell me that, men that is, that they can lose their sex partner any night, practically of the week, and within 30 minutes to 1 hour have another partner. They know how to get it, where to go to find them, another man. And this is serious. This shows you the percentage. It's terrific. It's alarming. But the man who is just lacks the courage to stand up and lacks not only courage but the know-how to guide his little woman to be submissive, to take her role in the home as she should. This is a serious problem. As I say, it's gone on for several generations. It not only creates this homosexual problem, but it creates many family problems on a more moderate way. This was the extreme. This is the extreme precipitate of this kind of thing. The other is the more moderate, where you find women who are strong in the woman who was raised in a strong, dominant female, under a dominant female, is very much inclined to be like mother. She may be opposite from mother, but has a very poor respect for father, really, and thus has a hard time relating to the man. If she is like mother, she will become more of the motherling type, wanting to mother everything in sight. If she's not like mother, if she's the opposite and cowers under mother, she will be looking for a mother among other women. This type of thing. I'm being very general. If many of you may know some more, quite a bit about this subject, and I want you to understand I am being quite general, because to be so specific is beyond our purpose here. But to talk about the male role, I think this is a very serious subject for all of us men to consider. We have responsibilities, many of us, in Sunday school, teaching boys, teaching fathers, teaching as we go along our way. Some of us have sons and daughters. We have families too, and wives and so on. And we have to relate, and maybe we need to sharpen up a little bit in our own male role in our own home. This is so important, because God has placed into our hands, when we said I will at the altar, and it launched a home. It was a career that we launched. It wasn't just a place where you could live with a woman legally. It was a career of being a homemaker. Homemaking ideas are given to women. I think more homemaking ideas need to be given to men, because God holds a man responsible for his home. You provide for it. We work night and day to keep the thing going and to meet the expenses. Our home, essentially, from all logic, it's our home. We're responsible in every ethical book for it, but we don't give the attention to the factors in that home that time that we should. There's so much that goes into that home life that should be our concern, that we say, well, let the little lady do it. That's her problem. Let her take care of it. Let her take care of it. Some fellows are faced with the problem of being the seat spankers. He comes home, Johnny's been out of order, give him a tanning, and Mary's been out of order, and she needs a discipline, and so happened. And mother says, I've had these brats all day, you take them now. And that's the way you feel about it, that you're just being used a bit. You don't get the sense of control in your own home, or the sense of partnership in your home. God intended that there be a real partnership and a sense of control. I'd like to suggest that manhood and fatherhood is designed of God to symbolize something. This term, father or man, symbolizes something. And let's, in the little time that we have here, try to shape up what these symbols are. First of all, I would say that manhood or fatherhood symbolizes strength. Strength. Let me give you a little picture here out of the scriptures. When God created man in his own image, it says, let us create man in our own image, Male and female created he them. He first designed to create man before he split it into two sexes, male and female. It takes male plus female to represent the image of God. There are female attributes in God as well as male attributes in God. I've had several clients, women, say, that's the trouble with religion. Everything is male. I have to worship a man. And it bugs me. To pray to a man, Jesus Christ, gets to me. Don't like it. And they aren't homosexual. They just have some male hostility. See? But God isn't that. He is cast in a male role, or male, in the male context in the scripture, as he and so on, because of his strength, of his love, of his provision, and this sort of thing. He's the giver. And man is designed by his sex to be the giver, to be the provider, to be the strong one. And when God represented his image by male-female, he did some splitting. Part of his image he awarded to the man and part to the woman. The major part of strength he gave to the man and the major part of beauty he gave to the woman. So that man has a feeling of deficiency in terms of beauty. Woman has a feeling of deficiency in terms of strength. This is not only physical, but also in terms of the whole psychological framework. She is the weaker vessel. The Bible itself says that. Man is the stronger vessel. Strength is the man's, is a symbol of manhood. Strength. Sometime you're in a barber shop, notice how many of these physical culture magazines, big muscles and hairy chests and all this kind of thing, are laying around. These are very interesting to homosexuals, by the way, but this is their type of literature. But that's not because it's that isn't your barber's fault. You know, he puts it in there. Other men like to look at it too. But this is just like pinup girls to them. So you have the strong man. Strength is always a symbol of manhood. It means to your family and to your wife, that's why she married you, that she could feel secure with you in your strength. She looked up to the man in admiration. This is one of the reasons why, just physically speaking, a man always thinks of himself he should be a little taller than his wife. He gets at least a geographical advantage or a physiological advantage. He feels at a disadvantage if he has to say, yes, dear, looking upward. The sense of being strong needs to be built into our thinking so that we do not have to be told that we are strong. We presume that this is what our wife needs, is our strength. And fact of the matter is, the wife looks to you for your strength. It's symbolized in your provision for the home. It's symbolized in your care for her. It's symbolized in your sex life. The woman, if I may speak plainly, is very much aware of not having strength because she's a castrated person. She does not have what a man has that symbolizes strength. And to a woman, a man's organs symbolize strength to her. And in the sex life, she obtains the man's strength. She holds it for a while. This is satisfying to her. Every woman is hungry for this because she gets no real fulfillment of her womanhood without that strength that a man gives to her. Also, she gets a sense of strength from pregnancy because this is, I'm bearing this child for my man. I'm doing this for him. This is a representative of him in me, you see? And so she has a sense of strength fulfillment here. She's hungry for strength. And then after the child is born, there's another sense of strength fulfillment. As long as the child is a toddling little youngster, totally dependent upon her, you see, just a nursing child, she has that fulfillment again, this mothering bit. But as soon as the child begins to act on his own initiative and have to be controlled, she begins to lose that sense of control. And nature causes her to go back to the marriage bed to start all over again, you see, to get her strength. You symbolize strength in your household. Assume the position, function upon it. Not to presume that I am strong, now hear ye, daughters and sons of so-and-so, you know, like this. No, but think the way, think it, believe it. This is God's design for you. And secondly, I'd like to have you think in terms of you being the chairman of the love department. The man, this is one of the aspects I think is lost in our culture to a large extent, that a man is the lover in his home. The man is the lover in the home. And this is where we missed it. We say, let the woman love the children. Let the many, many a person has come into my counseling room and shared their heart with me and told me, mother loved me, but I don't think dad did. Dad was too busy. I just suppose he did. Or, I know dad didn't. Man, he just tore into me and I was scared of him. See? All these different attitudes toward dad. Very seldom do I hear what someone say. Once in a while I do. Dad really loved me. I'm not sure about mom. Dad loved me. He was sweet. He was precious. In the 103rd Psalm, we're set way back 1,000 years before Christ, approximately, and David in this Psalm is telling about God the Father. And he is saying, trying to describe God in his love and in his tenderness. And he is talking about fatherhood among the Jewish people of that time. The kind of a father that God is was illustrated by the kind of the dads that the Jewish dads were to their children at that time. You know what it says? As a father pitieth his children, so the Lord our God pitieth them that fear him. That tender nursing care of the father. We need that revived in our Christian homes today. That the father feels that tender nursing responsibility to his children. To see to it that all of the elements that go into their personality growth should be there. To understand what they need. You know what the greatest complaint I hear from women is? My man won't read. I have to do all the reading in our household for the man, my husband. He wouldn't read anymore in the daily paper and watch the boob tube. That's all he ever does. See? I know I'm shouldering you with some responsibilities. As Ray and I was talking about it driving in from the airport the other day. He said one of the biggest problems that a man has is to try to find some time to do some reading on his own for devotions and so on. We all have this problem of time, but there's also a problem of interest. And if there's interest, we'll find a little time. If we see the importance of it, we'll find a little time. And I hope that you'll notice that you are God's love champion in your home. The one in charge of romance. Don't argue with me in your mind. Who was it that proposed? You don't want to admit that your wife did, really, do you? You are the one that proposed. You are the one that chose her. You were glad to find that she had let you, that she wanted you. But you're the one that decided that you were going to marry this girl. You're the one that wants to be the leader in all of your love affairs in the home. You don't want your wife to say the very things that should be your prerogative, let's go to bed or whatever it is, or why don't you ever love me? Or you want to be the aggressor. It's your right to be the aggressor. You are the lover. is important. And I believe if fathers in this generation would rise to the occasion and feel that God has endowed them with the ability to love, that they could love a lot better. In Ephesians 5, it says, husbands, love your wives. Didn't ask any questions. Can you love your wife? Try to love your wife. It just says, husbands, love your wives. It's as a strong command in my Bible as thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not lie, and thou shalt not commit adultery. Husbands, love your wives. One man said to me, and I pointed this out, he said, oh, good night. He says, I'm scared. He says, I can't love that woman. How could God be just and sit in heaven and expect me to love that thing? God didn't ask any questions. You married her, now love her. Now, here's what we don't consider. We don't know our own love mechanism. We loved her once or we wouldn't have married her. Love is an active verb. And it means that it's under the jurisdiction of our own willpower. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. God holds us responsible for the way we beam the love. Let not fornication be once named among you. Means that God says, don't let your love go astray to unmarried relationships. Hold it in line. See what I mean? Your love is under the jurisdiction of your willpower. And if you see that God is more important to you than a little pleasure, then you can bring that love back and channel that sex libido right straight to your wife. And when that happens, you'll find a new dimension in yourself, in love, and a new dimension of love in your whole household. Briefly, a third area in which I think you should be concerned or at least interested in terms of your male role is spirituality. Manhood is a symbol of spirituality. Now we're patterning a little bit after the Jewish household of the Old Testament, and it's right that we should do this because in the oracles of the Old Testament we find many of the principles and so forth that are still applicable in the New Testament. God made man, then he made woman. God, in his word, makes an emphasis on this point. God holds man responsible for the spiritual welfare of his whole home. In the Old Testament, the man was the teacher in his household. And in many Jewish circles today, the man takes this responsibility. I was invited by one of my Jewish friends to sit in on the Rosh Hashanah and the Yom Kippur and all these holidays. They're very interesting. And I enjoyed it. In fact, I was considered one of the brethren, I think. I don't know why. Can you imagine? I know it's because I took 2 years of Hebrew. But in this, I noticed something. The women all sat in back. The men sat up in front. The men went through all the rituals and the women visited. Then I understood what Paul meant. He said, women keep silence in the church. Because two or three times during the whole ceremony, the whole procedure, the moderator of the meeting, whatever they called him, had to stand up and say, women, will you please hush? We can't hear the reading of the Torah. See what I mean? Women keep silence. It's just a matter of don't visit while you're going to church. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that women can't have some part in the church life and church service. It's in that Jewish frame of mind that we're thinking. But the men are the ones that are responsible for the spiritual welfare. They are the priests of the household. If you can't have devotions with your family as a Christian brother, encourage your wife to delegate some of the responsibility and you join when you can. Some men don't know how to conduct devotions. I was talking to a man who was very zealous that his wife join in with the devotions and his family. He had to take off at 6:30 in the morning. You know what that meant? That meant that everybody had to get up pie-eyed and angry trying to stay up with Dad for the devotions. And he wasn't content until he had at least a half to three-quarters of an hour of reading and sermonizing. And then he prayed for quite a while, too. And then took off. And this made family devotions one of the greatest chores of the day. Everybody, whew, Dad's out of the house. Yes. And every child in that household had vowed and determined before God in heaven, if there be a God, that I'm not going to conduct my family like this. Now, that's not a very good testimony, is it? But this man is a militant soul winner. He gets applause from the church. He's a great, great guy. He's out there in about four different men's clubs, reaching men and boys in the L.A. area. But his wife, suffering from migraine headaches, under doctor's care. Why? He's not meeting the emotional needs in his own home, you see. He's trying to meet some intellectual needs, spiritual intellectualism, but he's not getting in there with the emotional needs. When I mentioned romance, it goes right in with spirituality because we must feel with our family on these things. How do my boys and girls feel about the Lord? How does my wife feel about the Lord? How do I feel? Let's talk about how we feel. And as you talk to the Word, in the Word, I find it in my family, and I have three children, that it's a very handy thing to do for little children to stay in the Gospels and the Acts, the story parts of the Bible, and only read just a very few verses. Make it a delightful experience. And don't let it get stereotyped. Some days, you read. And if you got a child that can pronounce the words, or try to pronounce it, let him read it. Someday you pray. Someday another pray. Another thing, I don't feel that everybody in the household has to pray about the same thing, so that each one can hear and make sure that everybody prayed. Why can't one person in the household pray today, another tomorrow, 10 lovely minutes together before the throne, tunes everybody up, polarizes them around the Word and the cross, and then they can go about their duties. Make it a happy experience. If you want to sing a song, fine. Want to listen to a record someday of somebody's message or a little music or whatever it is, keep it alive. But it's yours to do. It's your creation. It's your work. And to see if they get to church, sure, you've worked all week. You're dog tired Sunday morning. But what you need is a change. Your family needs a change. And you've had experience enough to know that you can be so dog tired Sunday morning from working all week that you can hardly get out of bed. But if you make the effort prayerfully, as unto the Lord, you come back feeling refreshed. You can rest a while Sunday afternoon. There are ways of doing what we want to do if we love the Lord. And we can be the spiritual leaders in our household. We can be the love leaders in our household. We can be all that is necessary in our household if we want to. If we really want to. Now, let's not try to storm the fort right away, but put down some definite facts, just like you do in your business. When you get a new idea in business, what do? When you get a new idea in business, you immediately institute a program, like you design a budget. And I'll work this much this month, this much that month, that month, and you keep increasing and developing it, don't you? You don't just suddenly come in and throw out the old constitution, put in a new constitution, throw out all the old secretaries, put in new secretaries. You move them a little bit at a time. Now, the way to, if you've got any insights today in your own household that you want to change, change it this way, by design and prayerful calculation, so that everybody involved will be happy to accept the change. On the other hand, if you found something that will help somebody else, share it with him in such a way that he won't feel like you're the big guy telling him what to do. Work it out in your classes and so forth. And may the Lord bless you. And if you have any time you want to talk to me and questions and so forth, I may not have any answers, but I'd like to hear what you have to say anyhow.
Time. If you have any questions that you might want to direct to Mr. Wagner right now?
What do you attribute to the cause for all the boys wanting to look like girls now, and the girls look like boys. Well, you can't tell them apart anymore.
Well, I only have an opinion on this, and I suppose that's all anybody has, really. We have a disturbed role factor in our homes. We've had it for a few generations, where girls are not clear how to be girls, boys are not clear how to be boys. And there's such a lack of general love in our homes, acceptance and so forth, so the home is a sort of a filling station and a sleeping hot porch, you know, and a TV tube, and that's about all that we have in the home structure anymore. And yet the home does demand certain amount of... does presume a certain authority over the child, let's say it that way, and legally so. So you have building into the child, many of these children, a strong rebellion against authority. And when they break into their teens, they are all geared to find their own independence, to emancipate from parental authority. And this is a normal drive to emancipate. You had it, I had it. We had certain problems with our parents at this time, trying to get them to understand that we had some sense, you know. We may not have had as much sense as we thought we had, but we like to prove that we did have something. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to find themselves. And they don't want to be what they have seen at home. And so they try to reverse things. They're just trying to be something different, that's all. And there's a delight in being daring, to be different, you see. And this goes into just so many, many things that we oldsters say, good night, what are we coming to? You know? But they'll get over it after a while.
Don't make them cut the hair.
Hmm?
Would you make your son cut his hair? That's the problem. Now, my son, like, I don't mean that, but I mean, if you were a father and you had a son like that, would you just make him cut his hair?
I think I would... I'll tell you how I would believe I'd handle it. I have two sons. I got one 9 years old. I may have this problem. I don't know. My son, 20 years old, I feel I'm safe through that. I didn't have to do that. But I'll tell you how I have maintained. One thing I have done in my family that I would not part with, it has brought me so many precious memories that I expect to continue with this little practice. See, I was a pastor for many years, and now I was a counselor, and I suppose, I don't care what I was doing, I would have trouble finding time for my family. And I began to realize that God was holding me responsible for some things that I wasn't able to handle because of time. And we have a daughter who was 23 and two sons. And I wanted a relationship with these kiddies, but my duties just would never quit. And if you know anything about the life of a pastor, and I know a couple pastors present will say amen to this, you never know when you're off duty. You never are. And especially if your parsonage is part of the church building. And the phones for the church offices are also in your house, upstairs and downstairs. So that two lines are upstairs, two lines downstairs, and you know, the same two lines, and also in the church offices. So that everything that happens in the church happens in your home. And you try, with people coming in the back door, people coming in the front door, you're serving somebody for dinner all the time, at least 5 days a week, 5 meals or 6 meals a week, we'd have some guests for dinner. And then try to discipline a household this way. You see what I mean? 7 days a week. You have to run out of the city. And if you could get out before somebody grabbed you by the coattail and said you had to go to somebody's house or dying or something. You see? This is the way the wife was in the city of Chicago. I'm not painting a very pretty picture, but God gave us grace, and we had many souls saved there, and we enjoyed it. But there were problems, as you can see. But I landed on an idea after I got to California and began to realize more and more what this was doing to my family, this intense living, that has done a great deal to bless me and my family. And that is a simple little thing on Saturday morning, having breakfast with one of the children at a time. So I can have a couple of hours alone, once a month or once every 2 months, just alone with one of my children. Even my little boy, when he was 6 years of age, man, he was just so proud he was going to go to breakfast with Dad. Take him down to the pancake house, you know, and we'd just sit there and visit. and he could talk to me, and then this time I'm the listener, and I just keep turning them on, trying to get them to talk, you know, enjoy their talk, and I am theirs completely to possess, and believe me, they do it. When my daughter was home for Christmas, we had from our college up in Indiana, we had two lovely breakfasts together, and it's a real sweet experience. She just poured out her heart, and as a result, I find my children don't have the feeling of rebellion because I let them emancipate. I let them feel like individuals. They feel like they have understanding with Dad and Mother, too. Mother has ways of getting to them that I can't because she's in the home all the time with them. But I can't, and this is my way of getting to my children. Breakfast with Dad. And it doesn't happen so often that it becomes an expense or a chore, but it happens often enough so that we have some real memories. Maybe I'll take them out for a ride afterwards, if I have the time. And we talk, sit up on some point where we can look around, visit, or do something. That's just my time with them. Now, I brought this in because I feel that if a man has a problem with any one of his children, instead of going at the problem directly with the shears to cut off the hair or something, build relationship so that boy feels he knows you and you know him, or that girl. And give it a few months to work on it. Let him wear his hair long or something. It's not going to kill you or him. And eventually, when you get the relationship, he will idealize you to the place where he'll want what you want and won't be so disturbed that he has to be something you don't want. So there's no value then on independence, no value on rebellion. There's value on identity, and that's what he needs all of his life, is this feeling of identification with